I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Bestseller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breast, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Hey, everybody. Mark here. Nicole has mentioned a few times on mic that I should do more shameless self-promotion of my band. So, shameless self-promotion it is.
Look into my eyes. Do you know this dance? Do you know this dance? Do you know this dance? See behind the lies as you make your plans. Will you take a stance? Do you know this dance?
That's right. The Slackademics have a new album coming out soon and our first single just dropped. This song, This Dance, is actually a re-recording of a tune we had on our EP a couple years back. You can find it on all the streaming services, so give us a follow. We're going to release a new single every few weeks, and the album itself, Pass Fail, will be available for pre-order come January. Probably you should have been hearing this song under my voice during this promo, but then it would be weird because you'd be hearing my voice singing and my voice talking at the same time. So, how about the bridge? I think the song has a good bridge. We got some cool backing vocals, a cool bass line by Brian. Check it out.
Speak up, let your body talk. Move up to the front row. Gear up for the time of your life. As we define our own destiny.
Give us a follow and a bunch of listens on streaming. And now, ads!
I bet, too, there's going to be a rise in the next... I'll make a prediction that there'll be a rise in more polyphonic music moving forward because everyone's, like, listening through headphones more than listening on TVs or radios. Mainly, I'm just saying that so I can use the word polyphonic. So
Cheers. Mark knows, yeah.
I've actually learned something.
Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm Nicole. And this is Nevermind the Music.
It is Nevermind the Music. And that hasn't changed since the last time we tried to record like 5 minutes ago.
No, but Mark.
Things didn't go well.
Couldn't figure it out. Classic.
I need to stop talking when we have company, though. Do the thing.
Hey, I'm Nicole.
No, not that thing. You're supposed to ask. Okay, David, you're here. Hi, David. We don't get to do our normal bit. Our rhythm's all messed up. Everybody, we are joined by David Lorehound, one of the three members of the triumvirate from the Lorehounds. Welcome to the podcast, David.
Always a pleasure. And I have to ask the question, who are the real Lorehounds? Because while we're recording this, Nicole is on Pluribus with me. And you, Mark, are with Alicia and John on It, which are both mainline core television show coverage podcasts on the main Lorehound Speed podcast. So
okay, they're like headline podcasts.
They're headline podcasts.
We've taken
and you
over.
Guys are like integral to those podcasts.
We've got top
right
billing. We're in the opening credits, not just the end credits.
I love
exactly.
it.
Exactly. You're not opening for.
Yeah. I've taken the plunge where I am recording podcasts in Amsterdam time. So waking up very early because Alicia, who y'all heard a few weeks ago with the awesome Hope Punk episode.
Such a good episode.
For sure. That was a blast. So you are our second Lorehound, a second of three. We hope to get number three in there soon. This episode comes out early December, but Welcome to Derry is still happening on HBO Max. And Pluribus is still happening on Apple TV. So if you're watching those shows, go to the Lorehounds feed, listen to us talk about those shows.
And Pluribus is just getting wild right now. I can't believe that main character did that wild thing in the last episode.
Yeah, I can't believe, spoilers, somebody died. Yeah, no,
I can't believe everything happened the way that I said it was going to happen.
And then Walter White showed up and it blew the internet away.
And we realized it really was part of the same universe.
We are a few weeks behind because we're recording this earlier. So we'll have to see what actually happens.
I should come on this podcast more often. This is fun.
We're drunk, actually, right now.
Yeah, right. We're all crashed out.
Well, that's realistic. Yeah. What are we actually talking about, though? This is an interesting topic that David actually, when we told him what songs we were talking about and what that we were talking Lionel Richie the week before this comes out, he had an idea. Do you want to intro it? Should Nicole intro what we're talking about today? What do you want to do?
I can talk a little bit about the germination and flowering of this idea, I suppose, just from the standpoint of how it came about. You had mentioned Lionel Richie, you know, as we were doing some planning and talking with Alicia and John and I about what sidetracks we wanted to come on and do stuff. And you mentioned Lionel Richie, Hello, which has a kind of an ironic resurgence, not too long ago, I guess. I don't know. There's something about that song. And then I think it was a couple days later, Mark, you and I were DMing, and then you were doing, maybe it was you were over apologizing. And I was like, bro, I'm at Gen X. You do not need to apologize to me. You can rub dirt in my face and never say boo about it. But like, I have an experience of millennials that they apologize for things that they're not responsible for. And it kind of came to me, generation and the generational music theorem. I started thinking about Lionel Richie and how as a young Gen Xer at the time, watching on MTV when I was in middle school, why would I know the lead singer, or was he the lead singer a significant member of the Commodores? What would I know?
One of the lead singers. He had a couple hits as lead, but not the only one.
Why would I know anything about this boomer singing to me, a young Gen Xer? And the idea, I was like, who makes music for whom? Hmm. And then how does that influence that generation? And when do they start making their music? So I did some internet searching and I came across an article and a whole thing. What is this guy's name here?
Matt Bailey.
Matt Bailey, thank you. And who wrote this whole thing about it. And it kind of blew my mind. And so this whole idea of who's making music for whom, and then when do those people start making music for themselves, and then when does that influence the next generation? And so how do we transmit music and style over time periods? And because we have a lot of fun with the generational differences on the Lorehounds. We've got our token boomer, Marilyn. I don't think we have any silent Generation Jones users, listeners, or hosts. A couple of Gen Xers, Jean and I. A couple of millennials, Mark, you, John. So then we have some Z, right, with Aaron and company.
And we don't have any alphas, right? Those Gen Zers, they're weird. Sorry,
no,
guys.
No alpha podcasters, luckily. They're too, no, too
our
young.
Our kids would be alpha.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're even weirder with all the skibbities and whatever.
Oh, God. Skibbity's
so, like, over now.
Don't even.
I know. So, even skibbity's saying been replaced it, by 6'7". Like,
yeah. So, okay.
Yeah.
So, okay. What are we talking about here? So, let's sort of shout out this specific reference if people want to go read the article. So, it's called The Generational Music Theorem by Matt Bailey. It's on Medium, I believe, is where it first came up, but then he kind of updated it in other outlets, originally from 2022. So this has been cooking in the zeitgeist for a little bit, but I don't know. I don't know about YouTube, but I have only sort of caught wind of this when David sent me this article. I hadn't seen this before.
Same. I found it when I started internet searching for why as an MTV Gen X, I remember watching in Jimmy's basement on the cable, you know, the astronaut dancing on the moon, you know, jumping on mm-hmm. the moon with the flag. They played a lot of Jack and Diane. They played, I'm trying to think of, obviously, TV killed the, what was it, TV?
Video
what,
wait, killed the radio star, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. And of course, Lionel Richie, you know, and like, why would I be consuming this? And that was really interesting because Lionel Richie adapted himself to MTV. He made popular songs and he adapted himself to the musical video genre, the music video genre. And so there's a whole bunch of, you know, a whole bunch of us Gen X's who got this sort of second stage boomer music.
So should we outline the basics of what his argument is, like what he's
sure.
positing?
Yeah.
You want to do it? You want me to do it? Nicole, you want to do it?
No, thank you.
Can you do it?
I can do it. Yeah, yeah. So I'll say, and I don't want to get into the details, but like he shouts out this book from the 90s by William Strauss and Neil Howe, which is yep. called Generations, the History of America's Future. And I don't want to get into everything that says, but he uses that kind of as a springboard. And that's actually the book that first coined the term millennial, right? So,
correct. Mm-hmm.
He called the Gen Z the Homelanders, which is just weird if you've seen The Boys. But personally, I don't like Gen Z. It feels weird because they don't call us Gen Y, right? So it's weird that they get to be Gen Z. And like, are we just forever? Is next gen beta, like just because we named you Gen X, David, the rest right. of us have to be alphanumeric successive to that
yeah,
for the
no,
rest
we'll,
of time.
Well, I think they should, the future generations get to decide, right?
No, really the previous generation decides what they, like my kid, our kids didn't decide to be called Gen Alpha.
No.
No, but they could throw it off.
Mark calls them the Zoomers.
No, yeah. That's Gen Z. Our kids aren't Zoomers. Our kids are Alphas. The Gen yes. Z are the Zoomers, right? Z, Zoom.
I don't
right?
think that's what it's about.
It's 100% Z stands for Zoom. It's not about Zoom, though. It's about boomers, but Z, right? It's coincidence.
Okay,
that yeah, because we just like, what's next after X? Oh, Z. Yeah, yeah. It was lazy.
Now the alphas
it was a lazy
are going to be the alphennials. They're just going to keep recycling the same term. So anyways,
right.
what this book by Strauss and Howe talks about, they sort of have a cycle, a four-era cycle, and it's kind of weird, but like some generations are heroes, then comes the artist generation, then comes the prophet generation, prophet with a PH, not with an F, and then come the nomad generation. And those all have features, but they cycle. Like the nomads wow. give birth to the heroes, which give birth to the artists. And then we have, it coincides with eras of civilization, like a high period, an awakening, an unraveling, a crisis. It's really complicated. And
that's
I'm
cool.
not at all going to assess the validity of any of it. But mm-hmm. Bailey uses this as a springboard to essentially create his own phases. His overall thesis, and I think we're going to, the three of us, going to fall on different sides as to whether we agree with this fundamental truth to what he's saying. He claims, Bailey claims, that major changes in pop music happen when the oldest members of a generation turn 21 or the youngest members of the older generation turn 30. So that's when he's saying major musical innovations happen.
That's really, really interesting.
It's very interesting. I have some issues with this that we can unpack. So for example, you and I, Nicole, are about the oldest members of our generation, the millennials, right? You
yes.
would say you are the youngest Gen Xer. So this is where yeah. we actually have kind of a complicated thing, right? So we turned 21 in the early 2000s. So according to what mm-hmm. he's saying, there should have been a major monolithic musical event around that era. I don't know what that event is in the early 2000s. First Kanye
band.
Album, maybe? Like,
well,
it's kind of
like
weird.
Because
I know we didn't, sorry to interject. I know we, you know, we're on an audio only podcast, so we can't show this visual, but I did make some graphs. So it's hard to not to refer to them in some ways mm-hmm. because, and we could post these in the Discord and, you know, I can
that's awesome.
Put one on that like on our Google that then people can link, you know, you can link to it, Mark, in the show notes. But, you know, the 2002 era is just before the EDM dance pop, according to the musical charts that I pulled out.
So this is, I guess I'm spoiling a little bit of my criticism. It's
okay.
a little arbitrary. Like if
okay. Sure.
According to what this is saying, when I turned 21, as being one of the oldest millennials, there should have been a monumental musical change. And then when my brother, who's a couple years older than me and who is the youngest Gen Xer, when he turned 30 in the early 2010s, that should have also been a monumental shift. And it all just depends. It's a little arbitrary, like, because I don't feel like 2002. Ooh. But let me finish kind of explaining overall theory here. So,
because are you going to mention extremes and doldrums as well?
Yeah. So this is what this is. So he starts with that fundamental statement, which is that major changes happen. The young kids turn 21 and the old kids turn 30. Right. So what then he does, which is similar to the book written in the 90s, is he has four eras that we go through. And it has a lot to do with what David was talking about who's making the music and listening. So if you think of somebody who's a kid, a teenager, let's say, they're not making the music, but they are the primary consumer and buyer and watcher of that music, right? He calls this the evolution phase, because this is when new things are being cooked up, right? And then later, when that group ages up to be probably in their 20s and they become the creator of music and also pushing the older generation out, he calls that a revolution phase. And that's, according to Bailey's argument, that's when we have major changes in pop music. And that's why I think he says when they turn 21, we have a major change, right? He also has two phases in between them. One of them is called extremes, which is when, like, you go too far and you have, like, gimmicky novelty stuff and stuff like that.
I think,
and
he cites Nickelback as an example in the
he calls that. Okay, we'll talk about the examples later. And then the other sort of in-betweener phase is doldrums, which is when a generation overstays its welcome. So he's got four phases, but really it's evolution and revolution as the handoff is made between the generations making the music.
So what he's done, I think, if I understand, he's taken, like, the rise and fall of changes in music and correlated them with the changes in generation. So when every generation is growing up, they're listening to music and content their parents are curating for them. And then eventually they start making their own music. They listen to that until they start making music for their kids to listen to.
Right.
Who listen to that music until they get old enough to make their own music that they listen to until they make music for their kids.
But he's also saying that as that generation transitions over, we get, like, radical change, right?
Right. And that's it's not a clean cut. Right. Like, things get weird. Things get, like, Nickelback weird.
Well, no, the Nickelback. But see, Nickelback is not a revolution, right? Nickelback is,
that's
according
doldrums.
To his argument. Yes, that things have gone too far.
Yeah. So makes sense.
So let's look at... Okay.
Overcorrect.
Like, right. I think Nicole and I are kind of going to cause complications to this when we start doing the math. But David, if we take you...
Yes.
When you became a young adult, when are we? What era?
Right. Yeah, the 90s.
And that's early 90s?
Yeah. So in 1991, I was 22 and I lived in Seattle.
Prime 1900s vibes.
Exactly. And I was down at the Crocodile and the OK Hotel. And
so Seattle in early 90s. And you're an older Gen Xer.
I'm not a senior, a Gen Xer. I'm 1969.
You're not a micro boomer.
I'm 1960. Yeah, I'm 69. I'm on the top end of the X.
So
spectrum.
That fits perfectly with what he's saying, because as you became an adult, we have grunge, gangsta rap. We have radical change in the music industry.
And we all grew up on a diet of Lionel Richie and what's his name? John Mellencamp and, you know, Radio Killed the TV Star, all that stuff. You know, we were MTV babies, which accelerates, which does a weird thing when we talk about Lionel Richie, right? Like, how did I know about Lionel Richie?
Sure.
Because of MTV. He adapted himself for the medium.
But your parents might not be boomers, right?
They're silent generation.
The younger of
my
that.
Father was too young for World War II, but too old for Korea.
Got it. So, because Nicole, you said, like, your parents making
isn't
music.
That sad? Sorry, just a commentary. I feel like it's a sad commentary when we have to age our families based on what wars they might or might not have fought in. That's, like, terrible.
Wild.
Anyway, separate topic.
He really did luck out, though.
He did luck out.
It's not so bad.
I mean, my dad, I mean, it's funny, but it's a part of, like, the family lore. It's like my dad turned 18 the week of the last lottery for Vietnam.
Wow.
So, like, not lucky dude, right? Like, he, I mean, no, he didn't go, right? But, like, he had one shot, whereas an older cousin 2 years older or whatever would have been in there, just like had so many shots, right? So it does matter. And in the same way that now we're going to talk about how old were you when COVID happened and stuff like that.
Right.
But I mentioned like your parents, because Nicole, you said, oh, the parents are making, it's actually kind of feels like in a lot of cases, the generation in between, right? Like the music that you and I grew up listening to, Nicole, was made by Gen Xers, but my parents aren't Gen Xers. My parents are boomers, right?
Correct.
And my kids are probably not listening to millennial stuff as much as they might listen to Zoomer stuff, right? Although Taylor Swift, she's a millennial. She's not letting go soon.
And like also something that's happening that's really interesting is things are starting to like come back into the lexicon. Like you're saying through MTV with Lionel Richie, how he like made her.
Wait, are Bell Bottoms back?
They are. We've even like gone past Bell
Bottoms. Gone past that already.
Happened.
We're right into a wide leg. We're into the 90s fashion, according to the college campus. Whoa. We're very into my mind. 90s fashion. But like my kid came home and she started, she's listening to her Spotify and she's putting on Four Non Blondes and Four Non Blondes. And I was like, how do you, she's singing it. I was like, how do you know this? And she's like, oh, it's like a TikTok song. She's like in her voice lessons singing Linger by the Cranberries. She's like, oh, I love this song. I was like, how do you know it? So she is listening to music made by your generation.
Right.
David.
Yeah.
Wow. Which is interesting.
I'm going to throw an even a wilder element to this. My daughter's listening to Lisa and Blackpink.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is K-pop.
Because now we're like more of a global community.
Yeah. And it's really funny to think about how hip hop has gone out into the world and it's boomeranging back at us. Just like rock and roll or the British Invasion was rhythm and blues that went out into the world and then came back through the British Invasion, which then spurred folk rock, psychedelic rock, and classic rock.
Just like JoJo Siwa predicted. Come back at you. Yeah. Come back. Okay, some people get it. Just come back like a boomerang.
No? Everyone must laugh now.
Delete JoJo Siwa. It's funny. Someone's going to laugh at that joke.
I think we should leave it in because it just makes us look out of touch for not getting it.
Yeah, you're pretty out of touch.
Yeah, I am a clueless Gen Xer. What?
And I feel like we have to, people are keeping score. Someone's got a wiki somewhere keeping score on how many references the others don't get. I have to say, I chose David to say, let's look at your sort of existence as a model for this. And if I'm guessing, maybe Matt Bailey is about your age, because it feels really true for your generation. And I just don't know that it does after that. I hate to go right into the like criticisms of this, but if you apply it to us, according to his own charts, the oldest millennials are 1982, which happens to be around when we were born, right? So when we were 21 in the early 2000s, he's saying that that would be a monumental shift in musical style. I would say it is a monumental shift in global politics with the war on terror. And it is a monumental shift in the music industry because of Napster. But I don't see a revolution musically in the early 2000s. And the next musical revolution he's talking about is the boom of electronic dance music in the 2010s. And I just don't see that as significant as rock and roll in the 50s or the birth of punk music or grunge. I feel like it's a little cherry picked. Like, it's not like 15 years later, all the top 40 singles sound like house music like they did in 2012, right? So I don't know. Like, I don't know that this argument works past the sort of late 20th century magnifier on it.
Ooh, I have an interesting theory as to why, because in the early 2000s, there was a shift in cultural transmission agents. So
I was thinking the exact same thing. It's the medium, it's the technology.
Right. Like prior to then, like you were listening to music through the, what do you say, David, the terrestrial radio and like word of mouth and your big brother
MTV
and you know, it was like Pat literally handed to you. And in early 2000s, when with Napster and with the internet, the world became a lot bigger and there wasn't so much like storytelling like oratory cultural transmission. It was more digital. And maybe if we rearrange his thesis a little bit to serve our best interest, you can say that Napster was the major music moment in that era, right? And if we just reframe it, because the problem I have with his thesis is that it seems like you could manipulate the data any way you want to prove his thesis correct. Like you could find examples from any era, any moment in time of music that was a doldrum or music that was
revolutionary.
Yeah. And I think it's really cool when we layer all of this information on top of each other. It's really interesting, but it doesn't seem, I question the scientific process, but that's my nature. And I also feel like I love reading the Medium article. I love reading like the thesis as it's written. It would not surprise me if someone drunk at a party cornered me and explained this whole thing with a similar gusto. Like it has that vibe to me.
Like listen the guy to this. Whispering like, in the ear.
Like, I just
the...
figured all out, man. Like check it out. There's this like generational music theorem. It's wild. Like it gives that to me in a way that makes me suspicious. Does that make sense?
Totally makes sense. Okay. And I don't disagree.
Like,
exactly.
I'm into it. But like that's the vibe.
Right.
It's like some guys trapped you and really just talking about Nickelback the whole time.
You know? I would add even some more critique, maybe not criticism, but critique. And looking at the graphic that I made, which we'll make available. But the numbers of different kinds of musics that were genres and subgenres that were generated from Boomer through Xer, the diversity starts to collapse. There are fewer and fewer recognized genres from the silent generation to the Gen Z, which we're only discovering now, right? And millennial. But with boomers and Gen X, we've got multitudes of genres. Some of them short-lived, some of them a little longer. So is there, I think that Medium makes a difference and the way that the record industry, because we didn't have, you had individual singers and you had some small groups, but to be a like arena rock star at this, like a Robert Plant or a Pete Townsend, you know, these names, like these big, huge, filling tens of thousands of people and living that rock and roll lifestyle, drug, sex, rock and roll, that whole kind of thing. That didn't get invented until the classic rock, psychedelic rock era, right? So the way record companies worked, the way music was pushed out, not only on vinyl and then on cassette and then on CD and then MTV, now we're TikToking and YouTubing and there's a rapidity, there's something happening in the frequency. But then what if we, in 100 years, what is it going to look like when we look back at this? Will we see patterns? Are we in the middle of a pattern that we can't see because of?
Yeah,
and Mark would know much more about that with the human history of music than
so that's an interesting thing. I think like he's focused on this kind of maybe 75-year period or whatever. And we're already seeing that like maybe there's certain massive changes that work for his timing in the 90s, but then it doesn't work as much in other phases. And I wonder if another way to look at it that's more related to what you were just alluding to is just the life cycle of a style of music at all. So like if we think of rock as something that, for example, because it kind of works in some ways because it all hinges on that early 90s grunge thing, right? Which is a substantive change.
Right. That's a real fulcrum point for the whole spread.
And that I think is fair, right? And also essentially, if we talk about life cycle, essentially functionally the death of that kind of music now. Like we don't really have rock being a major force in the same way it was. But if we say that it was born, let's say, depending on whether you distinguish kind of 40s R&B from 50s rock and roll, they're kind of one thing. But like if we say sort of 1950s starts, we have this life cycle that goes through phases, right? It goes through, you know, the sort of commercialization and innovation in the 60s. And then what we get in the 70s is tons of bifurcation into many subgenres. You've got country rock, you've got prog rock, you've got all this stuff. And then you've got sub like opposing forces that splinter off of it, like metal and punk and things like that, and alternative. And it turns into this huge tree. Well, hip hop is doing that too. Hip hop just started like 15 or 20 years later, right? In the mid 70s. And so whatever's happening in early 90s in rock, we could say is analogous to the same era of hip hop, but maybe it's analogous to 15 years early. Like the grunge era in hip hop is 15 years later because those styles are offset, and electronic music started later too. But like jazz started its life cycle in the 1910s, the late teens and into the 20s. And so jazz had its gangster rap moment back in the 50s. So I think it's just, yes, society changes, generations change, but ultimately these styles have different life cycles also. And yeah, like when was a millennial born maps onto a different phase of rock history than it does to the simple fact that like my dad and mom grew up with rock music. And so their relationship to the music I was listening to when I was a kid that was rock is very different to their relationship to the hip hop they heard when I was a kid. The same top 40 station would have a pop rock song that they thought was great and a pop hip hop song that they maybe would be confused, a little more confused. Sorry, mom and dad, they weren't super hip and early adopters of hip hop. And that says nothing really of the generation as much as just the life cycle of that genre as being a newer form.
And also like the life cycle of the listener. So if you think that, okay, teen up until maybe 16 years old, and or at least we'll say, we'll be generous, up until like 21, you're listening to parent music that your parents passed to you somehow, and then there's a shift. That makes sense when you layer developmental psych on top of that, because at that point, like when you're in your late adolescence, you are shifting from your family to your peers more. You do, even if your parents are the coolest parents on the block, you'll do anything but what they want you to do. That's an adolescent's job, right? Is to be defiant. So maybe that adolescent defiant triggers the iteration of new, very different music and this change and shift in tone, just as because of the developmental period that that individual's in.
Something that he points out in the article is that the younger generation that's consuming that previous generation's music, they're producing the music, but who's setting the trends are the consumers.
Mm-hmm.
So the consumers are receiving all of this, and then they're clustering around this song over here or that song over here. So they're magnetizing what the producers are putting out. So the you put out 10 songs, and these two are the ones that are interesting. So from a capitalism drive, an enshittification drive kind of, you know, you want to, well, no, that's not an certification, scratch that. You know, so you see that these two songs are resonating over here. As an artist, you go, oh, that's where I need to make my hits.
Right.
You know, right. I need that summertime, you know, what's the song of the summer? What's the Super Bowl song? Whatever, what it is, you're trying to match your creative output to a market dynamic. That market dynamic is being driven by the consumers,
so right, like
which
the,
are at these various stages of development, you know, going from teenager into, you know, young adulthood.
So right now in 2025, while it might be the older Zoomers and younger millennials that are making the art, it's the older Gen Alphas that are choosing which things are successful, right? And
right,
that are changing the art.
And popular songs aren't 12-minute tracks on long albums that have good interludes between each track, which I think the three of us would love. But they're like songs under 2 minutes that have really great hooks that are really digestible, which probably Mark loves because that's the type, you know, he's a pop music guy, right? But the trends in pop music are mandated by, the consumer. And if the consumer right now is a 13-year-old girl in her mom's car listening to TikTok or whatever.
And I think then that is mapped onto, or there's a relationship or a dynamic there with the technology.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're primarily consuming streaming music on a handheld device, that's different from my experience sitting in my buddy's basement with a 4:3 ratio color TV that's the size of a small elephant.
Mm-hmm.
Watching John Cougar Mellencamp sing about Pretty Little Pink Houses, right? Which, and then, I remember we had we participated in a Japanese student exchange program. I think it was my freshman year of high school. And one of the students that was visiting with us had a Walkman cassette player that was smaller than the cassette tape. It was this little clam thing that like just covered the holes in the head. And man, that thing was just like, whoa. But yeah, you know, we were listening to cassette tapes. And so we were album consumers, right? Unless you were hotboxing off the radio and trying to hit play and record at the same time on your thing.
I bet too, there's going to be a rise in the next, make a prediction that there'll be a rise in more polyphonic music moving forward because everyone's like listening through headphones more than listening on TVs or radios. Mainly, I'm just saying that so I can use the word polyphonic. So Mark knows I've actually learned something.
Everybody listen to the Blondie episode where we define that again. Thank you. But I mean, I think whether polyphony or not, like, ooh, because I could actually, interesting, because like headphones would suggest, yes, like stereo interesting things in the same way that like, you had like quadrophrenia and like these surround sound albums created in the 70s when that technology was invented.
Right.
On the other hand, Nicole, people listen on a freaking cell phone speaker sometimes. And that's about as mono as it gets. They are stereo, but you can't hear. So on the other hand, in the same way that they call it the wall of sound, the Phil Spector, the known murderer and record producer, Phil Spector, created this thing called the wall of sound, which was you would saturate the mid-range by overdubbing and adding tons of reverb because of the AM radio. And because you lost high and low frequencies, you only got the mids. Well, by God, let's make those mids as sexy as you possibly can. And so I just finished mixing an album and it's like, should I be mixing in a way that sounds good on somebody's crappy cell phone speaker? I can't bring myself to do so, but maybe I should be, right? I also wonder just with social media and with the way things are shared and the way that we don't have a monoculture, if these kinds of transitions can even really happen anymore. I don't know who it was, but I think it was a podcaster I heard recently put it that like your kid is watching some YouTuber or TikToker or Twitch streamer that's got 10 million followers and is legitimately super well known and their best friend at school is also watching a YouTuber, Twitch streamer, whatever, with 10 million views, but it is a different person and they don't haven't even heard of the one your kid is into.
Yeah.
Right.
Like there's
right.
just so much splitting. Like how would a new revolution of style even really happen when kids these days are so split?
Kids these days.
You know, kids these days. Yeah, I'm gonna yell at a cloud while I'm here.
So let's even throw in a crazier element to the medium question, which is, and those that 10 million Twitch, you know, that's Twitch streamer who has 10 million followers, viewers, whatever, they have a home recording studio that puts the Beatles Abbey Road studio to shame.
For real.
Right? The electronic tools that they have to create new sounds.
Hard
never mind
disagree.
The Eurorack.
Oh yeah.
Hard disagree. Fair enough. Okay, all right.
The analog microphone.
But you know what I'm saying?
Stuff.
The tools that that somebody has to make all kinds of music, and then they can make music with people who are in other parts of the world,
right.
either asymmetrically or symmetrically.
Sure, yeah.
And you did it. You even did it during COVID, right? You talked about stories about mixing, having recordings come in to you, and then
cell phone videos and turn them into little music videos.
You did it well, and it was awesome.
And they're good.
I have a question for you. I have a question for you, Mark. And I know that you're not going to like this because I know where it's going to send your head into a spiral of more work to do. Do you ever think about your Slackademics at Slackademics.com's upcoming album?
No. Slackademics band on Instagram. Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. The album's probably dropped by now or whatever. Whatever.
First single will have dropped by now.
That's exciting. Check it out. Do you ever think about mixing it multiple ways and saying, use this version on your iPhone, use this version on your headphones, use this version in your car? Because you said like you didn't know what to mix it for.
Yeah.
But does anyone ever mix it like Taylor's version, but instead of Taylor's version, it's like cell phone version.
There's like the mono version and the stereo version. Not really.
Oh,
because
is that what they
you
call
can't,
it?
You can't expect anybody to do that. Like if you do that, you're inviting people are going to listen to the cell phone version on their uncle's $1,200 high fidelity.
They totally will.
You know,
totally
and then they're going to listen to the hi-fi surround sound version on their cell phone. Like, I just think you have to split the difference. And you have to try to make it okay. And one of the things we do, mixing is like, I'm a composer, but like as a producer, my sort of like best superpower sort of is as a mixer. And what you do when you're mixing is you have to mix on a variety of monitoring devices. So like I'll listen to a thing, I'll work on it with my kind of fancy, not super fancy, but my near field monitors that are pretty high quality. And then I'll put a headphones in and listen to the track. And then I'll make a print of the track, put it on my phone, go to my car, plug it into my car, listen on my car. And then I'll go for a run listening on crappy earbuds.
Gosh, dude.
Because you have to simulate what it is outside of the studio context, because nobody except for their uncle who bought a hi-fi in the late 1970s is ever going to listen on anything as good as you are usually working, creating the music on, right?
And then you're self-critical in each of those environments, and then you go back to your stations
and you tweak it.
Yeah, that's like a lot of work.
So just, oh my God, I'm so sick of this album, because every time I would do a new draft, I would listen to it on like four different sources and I'm taking notes. I'm listening and I'm going, I can't hear the toms on my earbuds or I hear too loud on the bass in the car. And you have to just aim for the middle, because maybe the bass is too loud in the car, but on the earbuds, it's not loud enough. So what do I trust? I just, you know, your systems and you just,
now.
You work.
I'm seeing why you are the way you are.
Yeah, well,
because I could never do that. There's no universe that exists that I'm like, let me go back and tweak it and be like, that's good enough.
But do you want music to be, you know, like, do you need people like us?
I need people like you, but I'm not one of them. I'm a consumer.
I'm also
not a creator.
I'm also more maybe over the top than some people would be.
No,
where I'm constantly tinkering.
Come on.
But you're always in our heart.
But we need you.
So I want to go real quick back to the topic at hand.
Great. This is great.
You guys are so, this is beautiful. I'm looking at this graphic that I made, and I actually, when we were talking earlier about when Mark, you were talking about the lifespan of any given genre, and I was going on about how, well, there's all of these different subgenres spread out between boomers and Xers. And I'm looking at British Invasion or Motown Soul, British Invasion, folk rock, psychedelic rock, classic rock, disco, punk, blah, blah, blah. There are these fine gradations of genres because we are looking back 40, 50 years. And consumers are teasing apart, when did this band show up? When did this hit get made? Is this really part of this or is it really part of that? With millennial made music, and certainly Gen Z made music, we don't have the historical perspective of time to be able to look and say, I wrote this down on my little note sheet here, hip hop genres. I know nothing about the different genres of hip hop, and yet there are distinct genres. Mm-hmm. And I know people know that. I don't know that. And that's just because I haven't done the research. But there is, when did those evolve in doldrum and revolution
Some of that is the benefit of history. And for like somebody in the Discord pointed out in our episode about New Wave and Punk Blondie, it's like we had talked about how that kind of music became later to be known as New Wave. But the truth is it was actually, it was called New Wave. It was just the term New Wave was completely interchangeable in the late 70s to punk. If you said you were a New Wave band, it meant you were a punk band and vice versa. It's only later in a few years that they split that. So yeah, part of it is history informs us. Like, oh, we're going to call this indie sleaze. Like nobody was called yacht rock. Yacht rock is such a compelling term. I love it as a descriptor. Did not exist until the 2000s. Right. And that music stopped existing in the early 80s. But on the other hand, David, I would say some of this is style and subculture based. For example, metal has always loved carving up. Like back in the 80s and 90s, it would be like, oh, it's Christian black metal, doom metal, stoner metal. Like that was a subculture that seemed to, a community that seemed to love to subdivide and label. And I think some communities maybe just aren't as into that as others. So some of it might be the march of time and the 2020 vision of history. But I think the metal dudes were there. They were ready for it in the mid 80s already to start cutting things up and giving names.
Can we all agree that hair metal bands were the, is that the doldrums? What's the?
Feels like the doldrums.
Yeah, when it's like gone too far, like, bro.
I love that.
And Quiet Riot.
And even that label, that label gives so much clarity to some. It's like this last gasp, right? Of like, we didn't leave it all on the table yet, so we're just going to throw everything at it and just get it out of our system.
And the younger, typically, of that, that were in there, they're like, oh, I want to get my bag too, right? Like, I want to get my hit before I...
Let me cash it out. Yeah. That's interesting.
Cash you outside. Sorry. I'm trying to be hip.
I just actually brought her up in a lecture about the troubled teen industry like yesterday, which is hilarious. But the bad news.
Our icebergs are bumping.
They're floating around out there, man. Okay.
So the thing about hair metal, though. Hair metal totally represents what he's describing, what Bailey's describing as the excesses of a genre eating itself.
Gone too far.
But what's happening at the exact same time as those doldrums is... if we could call it that, is the birth of death metal, the birth of thrash metal, Metallica, stuff like that, doom metal, all of these more extreme sort of side quests that then get become eventually kind of more mainstream are happening at that same time as hair metal. So it's sort of, if he's talking about the extreme phase and the doldrum phase as kind of opposites, the fact that they're happening simultaneously in different parts of the community, in the same way that yacht rock, like really polished pop, was pop rock was happening in the late 70s, was also simultaneously punk was happening. And are those completely separate styles of music, or do they represent opposite extremes within the same style of music? And so it kind of like, if Metallica coexists with Quiet Riot as really different crowds, but different reflections of the same kind of music, I don't know how we can really say there's an era that is the mid and the late 80s when it's all of those things. Can we talk for a second about like what, because I don't want to leave all of Bailey's argument like just to this sort of overall point. He also gets specific about what's going on now. And he has predictions.
That's perfect. Because I was going to question, because who is it? Not Sabrina Carpenter. Who's the other young woman that's kind of, that makes me think of Lady Gaga with the theatricalness of it? I'm just blanking.
Melanie Martinez?
No, I don't even know who that is.
Oh, gosh.
It would be her. Chaperone, maybe?
Chaperone, yeah.
All
Chappelle?
Of the above.
No, yeah, Chaperone, yeah.
Chapel.
Yeah. That
Chaperone, babe.
I don't know their music in any way, very, very little. Or Billie Eilish. I was just thinking about that, like, what's happening now with the not Taylor Swift's? What's happening with all of the other?
So that's interesting, because what he says, and this is where he says, like, this is kind of a marker of the new trends. And then he makes some predictions. He's saying the music that's being made now, and he uses Billie Eilish as one. He uses Olivia Rodrigo as another, and he uses Lil Nas X, which feels very 2022 kind of for that to be
as like big, the icon of a generation
as markers. And what he's describing is really that there's a lot of intimacy there, and that the music is more intimate and more personal. But I don't know, because Taylor Swift came a decade earlier. Taylor Swift is quite intimate, and the intimacy between her and her fans is a huge part of that.
Chaperone
is contemporaneous to Billie Eilish and stuff, and that's really over the top and almost like you haven't heard her, but like you would feel like when you listen to a lot of her music, it would feel like club music when you were going to clubs, David. Like it has a lot in common with like Madonna kind of showiness and a lot of sort of the drag culture involved influence in it that was very common in pop music of the 80s and 90s, right? At least some of it. So I don't know, like you can cherry pick the intimate people,
but
what about all the showy over the top people that are representative of that Gen Z?
I think that that's more representative is this like gender fluid theatricality of like Lil Nas X and Chaperone and a lot, and even Billie Eilish to some extent, but like the Lady Gaga for sure.
She doesn't fall into...
She's not in that same like theatricality.
Not theatricality, but about the presentation of gender. right? Mm. She is definitely, they are challenging the notions of gender and gender right. expression.
Well, sure.
Compared to us.
To like a Taylor Swift.
If we look at like, again, like we don't want to, it's not scientific to just cherry pick your data, right? If we look at Billie Eilish, I assume Billie Eilish.
Come on, Mark, get out of here with that. I have my own facts.
Billie Eilish and Sabrina Carpenter are probably not that different in age, right? I think Billie might be a little older, but they're similar in age. And their approach to sort of, for example, showiness and sexuality is very different. Like Billie Eilish famously like would, you know, wear her baggy sweatshirts and like, I'm not going to let you sexualize me. Whereas Sabrina Carpenter like owns the sexiness part of her vibe, right?
And so I've heard some of her lyrics. I was like, whoa. Sure.
She exploits it, yeah.
Right, and like, so how do those...
I have opinions.
We can't really say... Well, you shared them. Everybody listened to the last year's Grammy episode. Whether Nicole Jr. is allowed to listen to Sabrina Carpenter or not is disgusting.
She's not. I took her to see Melanie Martinez in concert, and I'll say no to Sabrina Carpenter in concert. And if you know Melanie Martinez, you know how big of a deal that is.
I'm like internet Melanie Martinez right now.
They almost represent opposites of that aspect, and they maybe also represent opposites of how intimate their portrayal. You know, Olivia Rodrigo. Or like Gracie Abrams have that whispery vocal, but Chapel Roan does not, right? And so it's like hard to say this is what is happening, right? And that this represents, because his predictions are like very much specific. Like he says the 2020s will be the worst doldrums ever with plummeting audiences. That's quite the prediction. And then we'll get more intimacy coming out of that, even more intimacy. And then something will be, and this is where it gets vague, right? In the 2030s, things will go stale and we'll get something new. Like, sure, I agree. I'm sure that will happen. And then we'll have another revolution in 2035, according to his like math, his calculation.
Mm-hmm. As
Pennywise is reborn 27 years later. Sorry, David, go ahead.
No, I was saying this is Harry Seldon and Foundation.
That's right. Yeah, it has to happen, right?
Psychohistory.
So I don't know. Like, I think this is fascinating conversation, but I don't know that it's so simple as to just base it off of the because our generational cohorts are really defined by, honestly, like you said, David, earlier, isn't it a shame that like I categorize my parents based on, that's what generational cohorts are in the last 100 years. It's like the boomers are the boomers because of World War II, right?
Yeah.
The millennials are the millennials because of some arbitrary date, right? 2000, right? And we are
based on Jesus.
COVID is going to cause like, none of these things have, that's right. None of these things have anything to do with music and art, right? They have to do with global politics and calendared numbers and things like that. So why should it
ecosystem map correctly? This ecosystem that we evolve in. And as that ecosystem changes with the advent of new agents of change, like media and other technology.
Well, pretty soon we'll all be living in bubbles in a domed
just
society.
Just listening to like a rhythmic drumming and some robot shouting binary code at us.
That's
music.
What you already listened to, though, Nicole, I think, right?
The drums, for sure.
The AI drum circle stuff?
Like Rusted Root fed into AI, and then that fed into AI again, and then again and again.
Well, and then to somebody like me listening to that in the future, it's going to be listening to the modem tones when I used to dial into the internet.
Yeah, comforting, right? The squeaks. But also, like, I based on what I think the approximate age of I think your daughter's similar in age to our kids, Nicole and my kids, David.
I'm younger than, we're younger than Nicole and younger than you, Mark, but you have two, so.
I have two. My youngest is probably, so
we're
like,
10.
We had kids in our 30s. You may have had kids in
your 50s.
Late 40s. But there are people right now, but like, okay, if you go back up to my grandma, she had my mom when she was early 20s, right? But there are still people right now having kids in their early 20s. So what kind of generational cohort is that, right? Because this Gen Alpha, their parents are a massive, Gen Alpha could be, have Zoomer parents all the way through Gen X parents, right?
And so, and I think his model is really, historically, we're not going to be able to, it works for this slice right now to describe, and I don't know that it's predictive value as opposed to its descriptive value.
Yeah.
Descriptively, it's very cool. And I made a really cool graphic for it.
We can't wait to share it with
them. David keeps talking about the graphic. I don't know what we're going to do, but it's going on the Discord, or maybe it'll go on the Lorehounds website.
I can put, there's a way that I can put a, put it publicly available on our Google Drive that then you can put a link to it so people can click on it in the show notes. And so.
Great. Well, this has been awesome. We're at about an hour. Should we, can we wrap? Are we done? Did we solve music?
Yeah. So, what are people, it's early December, David, how can people find you? What should they be listening to?
Well, they can find Nicole and me on the main Lorehounds feed covering Pluribus. We will, we've got a whole bunch of weird side projects going on as well, some different movie stuff. I believe you will still be covering It, Welcome to Derry around that time. We will also have our top 10 movie picks. John, Alicia, and I always record. We release that on Christmas Day. And then I, in December, will be coming around to you. And you guys, I was just making my list today and checking it twice. I'm going to be scheduling with you guys for your top threes because we can't do all of all the Lorehounds community. Like, it would be a forever podcast. But I will come to you for your top threes. And then that will be our Boxing Day episode. And I'll have that like with Aisha and the Dune Minute guys and Marilyn and Jean, you know, just the whole gang. Anthony,
I love that. It's all fun. Yeah. It's always fun to like hear people's responses for their like end of year wrap ups for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to that. So glad you could join us today. Welcome to this madhouse over here. And never mind the music. Come back soon. Yeah.
We often like to end on a stinger, something kind of funny. Can you share with us the most Gen X joke you can think of? Want to end on it?
The most Gen X joke? God, the only thing that comes to mind is a limerick. But that's just, no, I can't. I don't have a Gen X joke for you. I'm sorry.
We'll just leave them wondering.
No time. No, there's no time for it. No one cares about Gen X and their jokes.
No, I'm sorry. We're just too jaded.
That's a Gen X joke. Jokes on them.
Jokes on us. I will say this. Jean and I were talking about this the other day. Politically, Gen X, we're cooked. Dude. It's your guys' show, right? It's time for millennials to run for offices. And
will there
take
never
the
be a Gen X president?
No, there will never be a Gen X president.
That is wild. You're getting
okay
skipped over.
No, we're too. Yeah, no. We'll help you. We'll be in your cabinet. We'll know be your secretaries of whatever. But no, we're done. We're done.
Never Mind the Music is hosted by Nicole Batcher and me, Mark Poppany. I also produce. Please leave us a rating and a review, and don't forget to follow. We're Never Music Pod on social media, and you can also send us an email at nevermusicpod@gmail.com. Never Mind the Music is part of the Lorehounds Network. Join the conversation by going to thelorehounds.com and hop on our Discord server. Thanks for listening.